Chapter 2. Resigns his pretensions, which he had again taken up for some time. Stanislaus is peaceably possessed of the throne, and the King of Sweden declares for the Emperor. I cannot omit one particular accident here at home, that near the end of this month much mischief will be done at Bartholomew Fair, by the fall of a booth. September. This month begins with a very surprising fit of frosty weather, which will last near 12 days. The Pope having long languished last month, the swellings in his legs breaking, and the flesh mortifying, will die on the 11th instant, and in 3 weeks' time, after a mighty contest, be succeeded by a cardinal of the imperial faction, but native of Tuscany, who is now about 61 years old. The French army acts now wholly on the defensive, strongly fortified in their trenches, and the young French king sends overtures for a treaty of peace by the Duke of Mantua, which, because it is a matter of state that concerns us here at home, I shall speak no farther of it. I shall add but one prediction more, and that in mystical terms, which shall be included in a verse out of Virgil, alter erit jam tiis, adultera qua vetit argo. Delectos heroes. Upon the 25th day of this month, the fulfilling of this prediction will be manifest to everybody. This is the farthest I have proceeded in my calculations for the present year. I do not pretend that these are all the great events which will happen in this period, but that those I have set down will infallibly come to pass. It will perhaps still be objected why I have not spoke more particularly of affairs at home, or of the success of our armies abroad, which I might, and could very largely have done. But those in power have wisely discouraged men from meddling in public concerns, and I was resolved by no means to give the least offense. This I will venture to say, that it will be a glorious campaign for the Allies, wherein the English forces, both by sea and land, will have their full share of honor. That Her Majesty Queen Anne will continue in health and prosperity, and that no ill accident will arrive to any of the chief ministry. As to the particular events I have mentioned, the readers may judge by the fulfilling of them whether I am on the level with common astrologers, who, with an old paltry cant and a few potluck for planets, to amuse the vulgar, have, in my opinion, too long been suffered to abuse the world. But an honest physician ought not to be despised, because there are such things as mountebanks. I hope I have some share of reputation, which I would not willingly forfeit for a frolicker humor. And I believe no gentleman who reads this paper will look upon it to be of the same cast or mold with the common scribblers that are every day hawked about. My fortune has placed me above the little regard of scribbling for a few pence, which I neither value or want. Therefore let no wise men too hastily condemn this essay, intended for a good design, to cultivate and improve an ancient art, long in disgrace, by having fallen into mean and unskillful hands. A little time will determine whether I have deceived others or myself. And I think it is no very unreasonable request that men would please to suspend their judgments till then. I was once of the opinion with those who despise all predictions from the stars, till the year 1686 a man of quality shewed me, written in his album, that the most learned astronomer, Captain H. assured him, he would never believe anything of the stars' influence, if there were not a great revolution in England in the year 1688. Since that time I began to have other thoughts, and after 18 years' diligent study and application, I think I have no reason to repent of my pains. I shall detain the reader no longer than to let him know that the account I design to give of next year's events shall take in the principal affairs that happen in Europe, and if I be denied the liberty of offering it to my own country, I shall appeal to the learned world by publishing it in Latin and giving order to have it printed in Holland. The accomplishment of the first of Mr. Bickerstaff's predictions, being an account of the death of Mr. Partridge, the almanac maker, upon the 29th instant. In a letter to a person of honor written in the year 1708, my lord, in obedience to your lordship's commands, as well as to satisfy my own curiosity. I have for some days past inquired constantly after Partridge the Almanac Maker, of whom it was foretold in Mr. Bickerstaff's predictions, published about a month ago, that he should die on the 29th instant about 11 at night of a raging fever. I had some sort of knowledge of him when I was employed in the revenue, because he used every year to present me with his almanac, as he did other gentlemen, upon the score of some little gratuity we gave him. I saw him accidentally once or twice about 10 days before he died, and observed he began very much to droop and languish, though I hear his friends did not seem to apprehend him in any danger. About 2 or 3 days ago he grew ill, and was confined first to his chamber, and in a few hours after to his bed, where Dr. Case and Mrs. Curlis were sent for to visit, and to prescribe to him. Upon this intelligence I sent thrice every day one servant, or other, to inquire after his health, and yesterday, about 4 in the afternoon, word was brought me that he was past hopes. Upon which, I prevailed with myself to go and see him, partly out of commiseration, and I confess, partly out of curiosity. He knew me very well, seemed surprised at my condescension, and made me compliments upon it as well as he could, in the condition he was. The people about him said, he had been for some time delirious. But when I saw him, he had his understanding as well as ever I knew, and spake strong and hearty, without any seeming uneasiness or constraint. After I told him how sorry I was to see him in those melancholy circumstances, and said some other civilities suitable to the occasion, I desired him to tell me freely and ingeniously whether the predictions Mr. Bickerstaff had published relating to his death had not too much affected and worked on his imagination. He confessed he had often had it in his head, but never with much apprehension, till about a fortnight before, since which time it had the perpetual possession of his mind and thoughts, and he did verily believe was the true natural cause of his present distemper. For, said he, I am thoroughly persuaded, and I think I have very good reasons, that Mr. Bickerstaff spoke altogether by guess, and knew no more what will happen this year than I did myself. I told him his discourse surprised me, and I would be glad he were in a state of health to be able to tell me what reason he had to be convicted of Mr. Bickerstaff's ignorance. He replied, I am a poor ignorant fellow, bred to a mean trade, yet I have sense enough to know that all pretenses of foretelling by astrology are deceits, for this manifest reason, because the wise and the learned, who can only know whether there be any truth in this science, do all unanimously agree to laugh at and despise it, and none but the poor ignorant vulgar give it any credit, and that only upon the word of such silly wretches as I and my fellows, who can hardly write or read. I then asked him why he had not calculated his own nativity, to see whether it agreed with Bickerstaff's prediction, at which he shook his head, and said, oh, sir, this is no time for jesting, but for repenting those fooleries, as I do now from the very bottom of my heart. By what I can gather from you, said I, the observations and predictions you printed with your almanacs were mere impositions on the people. He replied, if it were otherwise I should have the less to answer for. We have a common form for all those things. As to foretelling the weather, we never meddle with that, but leave it to the printer, who takes it out of any old almanac, as he thinks fit. The rest was my own invention, to make my almanac sell, having a wife to maintain, and no other way to get my bread, for mending old shoes is a poor livelihood. And, added he, sighing, I wish I may not have done more mischief by my physic than my astrology. So I had some good receipts from my grandmother, and my own compositions were such as I thought could at least do no hurt. I had some other discourse with him, which now I cannot call to mind, and I fear I have already tired your lordship. I shall only add one circumstance, that on his deathbed he declared himself a nonconformist, and had a fanatic preacher to be his spiritual guide. After half an hour's conversation I took my leave, being half stifled by the closeness of the room. I imagine he could not hold out long, and therefore withdrew to a little coffee house hard by, leaving a servant at the house with orders to come immediately, and tell me, as near as he could, the minute when Partridge should expire, which was not above 2 hours after, when, looking upon my watch, I found it to be above 5 minutes after seven, by which it is clear that Mr. Bickerstaff was mistaken almost 4 hours in his calculation. In the other circumstances he was exact enough. But whether he has not been the cause of this poor man's death, as well as the predictor, may be very reasonably disputed. However, it must be confessed the matter is odd enough, whether we should endeavor to account for it by chance, or the effect of imagination. For my own part, though I believe no man has less faith in these matters, yet I shall wait with some impatience, and not without some expectation, the fulfilling of Mr. Bickerstaff's second prediction, that the Cardinal de Noailles is to die upon the 4th of April, and if that should be verified as exactly as this of poor Partridge, I must own I should be wholly surprised, and at a loss, and should infallibly expect the accomplishment of all the rest. An elegy on the supposed death of Partridge, the almanac maker. Well, 'tis as Bickerstaff has guessed, though we all took it for a jest. Partridge is dead, nay more, he died ere he could prove the good squire lied. Strange, an astrologer should die, without one wonder in the sky. Not one of all his crony stars, to pay their duty at his hearse? No meteor, no eclipse appeared? No comet with a flaming beard? The sun has rose, and gone to bed, just as if Partridge were not dead, nor hid himself behind the moon, to make a dreadful night at noon. He at fit periods walks through Aries, however our earthly motion varies, and twice a year he'll cut th equator, as if there had been no such matter. Some wits have wondered what analogy there is twixt cobbling and astrology. How Partridge made his optics rise from a shoe sole to reach the skies. A list of cobbler's temples ties to keep the hair out of their eyes, from whence 'tis plain the diadem that princes wear derives from them. And therefore crowns are nowadays adorned with golden stars and rays, which plainly shews the near alliance twixt cobbling and the planet's science. Besides, that slow packet sign boots, as 'tis miscalled, we know not who 'tis. But Partridge ended all disputes, he knew his trade, and called it boots. The horned moon, which heretofore upon their shoes the Romans wore, whose whiteness kept their toes from corns, and whence we claim our shoeing horns, shows how the art of cobbling bears a near resemblance to the spheres. A scrap of parchment hung by geometry, a great refinement in barometry, can, like the stars, foretell the weather, and what is parchment else but leather, which an astrologer might use, either for almanacs or shoes. Thus Partridge, by his wit and parts, at once did practice both these arts, and as the boding owl, or rather the bat, because her wings are leather, steals from her private cell by night, and flies about the candlelight, so learned Partridge could as well creep in the dark from leathern cell, and, in his fancy, fly as fair, to peep upon a twinkling star. Besides, he could confound the spheres, and set the planets by the ears. To shew his skill, he Mars could join to Venus in aspect malign, then call in Mercury for aid, and cure the wounds that Venus made. Great scholars have in Lucian read, when Philip, king of Greece, was dead, his soul and spirit did divide, and each part took a different side. One rose a star, the other fell beneath, and mended shoes in hell. Thus Partridge still shines in each art, the cobbling and star-gazing part, and is installed as good a star as any of the Caesars are. Triumphant star! Some pity shew on cobblers militant below, whom roguish boys in stormy nights torment, by pissing out their lights, or throw a chink convey their smoke, enclosed artificers to choke. Thou, high exalted in thy sphere, mayst follow still thy calling there. To thee the bull will lend his hide, by Phobos newly tanned and dried. For thee the Argo's hulk will tax, and scrape her pitchy sides for wax. Then Ariadne kindly lends her braided hair to make the ends. The point of Sagittarius's dart turns to an awl, by heavenly art, and Vulcan, wheedled by his wife, will forge for thee a paring knife. For want of room, by Virgo's side, she'll strain a point, and sit astride, to take thee kindly in between, and then the signs will be 13. Partridge was a cobbler. See his almanac Tibi Brachia contra head engine Scorpius, etc., an epitaph on Partridge. Here, 5 foot deep, lies on his back, a cobbler, starmonger, and quack, who to the stars in pure goodwill. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.